Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, it's Angela, and I am here with John and Jim. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. We're wading into an area that some may say is political, but we believe is at the heart of what every child advocate is here to do. We know that many of you are struggling like we are, trying to make sense of what's going on in our world right now. So we decided to take the time to put our thoughts together. Maybe it will resonate with how you're feeling and you won't feel as alone. And if you stick around to the end, we'll offer you some actions you can take if you're not okay with how children are being treated. And you should not be okay. So I will preview some of our thoughts here in the beginning, and then John, Jim, and I are going to have a discussion together about it. Most of our listeners here are lawyers who represent children involved in child welfare systems. We see daily the impacts of trauma on children and the lifelong consequences it brings. In our cases, the trauma is usually caused by caregivers, and our child welfare system is designed to protect the children and help get the family back on their feet. One of the main reasons we're recording this episode is the glaring hypocrisy we are seeing on a daily basis and how our government is operating. On the one hand, we have a government that is separating children from their parents with the goal of keeping them safe. And here I'm talking about the child welfare system. In these instances, we are essentially deciding that the state can keep the children safe when the parents cannot. Now, we could talk for days about the many problems with the system, with the model, with its implementation, but one thing is definitely true. The child welfare system is made up of mostly well-intended people trying to keep children safe. We know there's lifelong trauma that results from separating children from their parents, but we do it because the alternative at least appears worse. Now, on the other side of our government, we have our current immigration enforcement practices. And here we have the government violently removing children from their parents, not because they're unsafe, but because they're undocumented. Children are detained in conditions that would meet the criteria for removal over in our child welfare system. Same trauma, but no countervailing reason. In this part of the government, ICE agents are breaking down doors, pointing guns at children, dragging people from their cars, using zip ties on children, and separating children from their parents. The scenes that we're all seeing on the news look like SWAT teams going in to take out international terrorists. Some are calling it theater, but what we see is government-created trauma, and why? Reasonable people can certainly disagree on policies around lawful immigration. This issue is not new. But can reasonable people really disagree that these practices are harming children? Child welfare has typically been a bipartisan issue for good reason. Even if people disagree on funding or certain policies, everyone's stated purpose is usually the same: to keep children safe and preserve their well-being. So if you look at what is going on in our country, as a child advocate, a parent, or other family member, how are we doing? We think a good test for this is offered by the quote that you often hear from Nelson Mandela. And his quote says, "There can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children." So now I'm going to hand it off to John to talk a little bit about why we're bringing this up with you today.
Thanks, Angela. So yeah, why are we talking to you about this specifically, our audience? Well, you're all child advocates, which means you all are uniquely suited to speak out and act with regard to this issue. Why? Well, because number one, you understand due process. Number two, you understand the long-term impacts of childhood trauma and how society pays a cost for that. And honestly, number three, you have advocacy skills and communication skills that, quite frankly, some people do not have. And you are therefore able to make a greater impact when you utilize those skills, right? We are all trained to take the facts, apply the law to the facts, analyze them, and formulate an argument to support our position. So you really are skilled in this regard, and therefore your voice is a valuable tool. Now, this is not and never has been a political podcast, but for us, the problem is it feels hypocritical, as Angela said, to do a podcast and talk about the rights of children and not comment on these non-negotiables that we're going to go over now that all U.S. citizens should demand from their systems and leaders.
I think it's important, the point you and Angela made about physical safety of children, and that being the primary fundamental reason for removal in our society in America. Child welfare removes because of the nation's, the state's interest in protecting the children from harm. And that, basically the balancing test that's done there is the harm to the child in the home is going to be worse than the harm of removal. We all know that we harm children very often by removing them from their parents. And so it's a balancing act. It's never like, oh good, they're safe from harm now. We did 100% good thing by removing them. Everything in life is a double-edged sword. And the two edges of this sword is the harm that that parent was going to cause that child. The other edge of the sword is the harm to that child from removal. And it can be lifelong traumatic harm. And so we really look for the reason, the necessity for removal in our society and in our child welfare system. And with the undocumented children, we've stopped looking or even needing that necessity. And so it's the indifference of our government's treatment of these children right now that is forcing us to speak on this issue right now. You know, 30 years in a child welfare system can teach you some things about systems, and it can teach you how to recognize when a system is not running well and when the people running it don't know what they're doing. And it can also teach you that someone's going to get hurt. We have been through so many permutations of the Florida child welfare system down here, and we have seen the consequences of having people who don't know what they're doing running a system. And whatever your political beliefs might be right now about the immigration policies of this country, I would think anyone with a law degree can see that this system is being run by people who don't really know what they're doing. That shouldn't be a controversial statement. My experience of 30 years in the child welfare system enabled me to stand in my kitchen 7-8 months ago and say, they're going to shoot an American citizen or more, one or more. And I predicted it with a sad certainty, but it's something I said not hypothetically or rhetorically. I was absolutely certain 8 to 9 months ago, based on what I was seeing of how a system was running with men with guns in the streets, that they were going to kill American citizens. So when it happened, I simply was not surprised. And much like when foster care systems are not being run well and licensing and home studies are being done poorly, my brother and I can sit back and say, someone's going to die. Someone's going to get abused. And we see it happen enough that this is what happens. And so we have a system now that's not running well and that no longer prioritizes child safety. It's indifferent to it. And so it's important that we keep our eye on the ball of how our society is treating children at this time. There are detention conditions right now that are just not humane for children. There are separations from parents happening without any legal necessity for it being shown. The act of being undocumented in this country is very often a civil infraction. So arresting a family, arresting children, some of the children are U.S. citizens. There's no legal basis to detain them. And yet Homeland Security apparently is doing it to keep the families together. It's a curious system being run by people who clearly don't quite know how to run a system. When parents are arrested in our society for a criminal offense, we don't lock their children up with them to keep the family together. So the thinking has no basis in logic, and it lacks the legal foundation that runs our child welfare system. So I think it's important at this point that we take a hard look at the practices, and as child advocates, we're thinking and speaking about these issues.
One thing that really came up for me is that when we make poor decisions in child welfare, when things don't go well, it's when we're rushing. It's when something bad has happened and everyone freaks out and starts removing kids quickly and not thinking through the consequences. And this whole immigration policy feels like a giant rush. And, you know, it's been very difficult, I think, for immigration lawyers to keep up to protect their clients. And, you know, some of the examples that we've been seeing, and these come directly from the lawyers themselves. One of the stories that has not left my head is this is in Texas, is there were 2 5-year-old twins who were in detention. And when they had their detention hearing as to whether they had to remain, the judge determined that they could not be released because they had no assets. And I can't laugh at any of this. It's somewhat comical, but the lawyer literally said, well, how much candy would they have needed in order for the judge to allow them to leave detention? How many toys? And really, when you just stop and think of it, the absurdity that we are keeping children in these conditions over lack of assets is just hard to stomach. I think the other part of rushing is the lack of oversight. And that's why what we're hearing about the conditions, it's very spotty. But what we are hearing is horrific. Another lawyer spoke out recently about a 13-year-old client that tried to commit suicide in detention, who had been there for 2 months. And it's so bad that this child tried to commit suicide. So for us to sit over here and advocate for improving the child welfare system while we have something going on the immigration side that clearly is not meeting children's basic needs is just difficult.
And so I mean, I think that brings us to our second non-negotiable. The first being, of course, you know, do no harm to children. Do not orphan American children on the streets of Minnesota. But the second non-negotiable is due process. As attorneys, as citizens, right? Due process should be a non-negotiable. Parents who come here, we all know this, parents who are in this country without legal status are entitled to counsel when their children are removed. They're entitled to full due process when their children are removed for abuse, abandonment, or neglect. But what we're seeing on the immigration side is people being detained and deported without meaningful representation, without a chance to confer with counsel. And we're seeing families separated, again, without any process. And then it's insidious the way it's the really important thing for us as children's attorneys is to know that not only is this happening, you know, on the stage where the show is taking place for all of us, but beneath the surface, the erosion of special immigrant juvenile status, which has long been an avenue for children in foster care to be able to have a path to a green card and eventual citizenship. It's a special carve out that when a juvenile judge makes a finding that it is not safe for a child to return to their country of origin, and it is in their best interest to remain in this country, and they are not being reunified with their parents who may possibly be back in that country or are here, but have been determined to be abusive, those children who were taken into the custody of the government had a path to a green card. And it was meaningful because there was something that accompanied it that was called deferred action. And what that meant was that once you were determined to be a special immigrant juvenile, you could get a work permit and you could work. Because it used to take 3-4 years to get a green card. Now it's taking 5 to 10 years, I'm being told by immigration attorneys. But you could work during that time. They've taken away deferred action. So now if you're a 15-year-old and you get special immigrant juvenile status, you no longer can work. And you might be in this country for 10 years waiting for a green card, but you can't legally work. So even though special immigrant juvenile status still technically exists, how meaningful is it for that child who gets it but can't work for 10 years? What's the saying? Justice delayed is justice denied. They're taking it away from foster children, but I don't think they want to be seen taking it away. They're conscious of this. And who better to speak out about this than those of us who represent these kids and understand the issues? The people who understand what due process is. So in addition to due process, we have a third non-negotiable, and that's well-being. We as citizens want our children to be free from trauma and fear. And what's scarier for a kid than thinking that at any minute, my mom or dad could be snatched and taken away from me with no process, with no warning, violently, by masked men, armed masked men in the streets. And then the child is left to think what's going to happen to them if this happens or when it happens. And they go into detention. Are they going to disappear? Am I going to see them again? Are they going to be hurt? And it's important also to remember that the children who are friends of these children also feel this fear. American children are thinking, what happens if my friend disappears? What if she just isn't in class the next day? So we have teenage moms who do not have legal status, who are foster children, who are signing powers of attorney to the staff at their group homes so that in the event they are taken, there will be someone to take care of their babies. So that's the kind of fear that we're talking about. And it's affecting both immigrant children and American children too, because they live side by side in this country. And the fear is in the air and it is felt by all children. And we, as children's attorneys, know that society will pay that bill in the future for traumatizing a generation of children by making them watch this happen and making them feel this fear. Okay, so what are we asking today? Well, as overwhelming as it seems, if everyone does nothing, then it continues. But on the other hand, if everyone does something, like just even discuss it on your podcast, then it becomes overwhelming for those who behave badly. So we need to take the overwhelming off of us and put it onto the people that we want to feel it in order to affect change. And there's ways we can do that. You can shine a light on what is happening in your community from your perspective as a child advocate. You can let people know that they are taking things away from foster children. You can try to find additional legal support for people who are facing these issues. And one of the most powerful things you can do is use your advocacy skills and your knowledge and write or call your legislator in a meaningful manner and say what needs to be said. And we appreciate how busy everyone is. So we have written a letter and we'll post it in the show notes that everyone is free to use if they would like. And it's written from the perspective of the child's attorney, the child advocate. And you're free to use it or edit it as you see fit and send it to your representative. We'll also put links in the show notes to places where you can find your senator and representative and identify who to send it to. These letters actually matter, and calls may matter even more, but both matter much more than you think.
Yeah, I was just at the Capitol here in Utah a couple of weeks ago and was listening to a state legislator talking about how just 5 to 10 emails or calls on the same topic makes them want to see what's going on. Now at the federal level, sure, you know, that's most likely higher, but I think so many people are overwhelmed that, and they don't know what to do or they don't know how to say it. And so they're not getting those emails or calls. Whatever you want to do, calling is great, emailing is great. But the point is, as child advocates, as people who know, really, really know what trauma does to children and families long term, we have to say something. And, you know, we've given you our perspective. I'm sure you have your own perspective based on what you're seeing. But the bottom line is exactly what John said, is if we say nothing, it will continue and we will be watching this for years.
Yeah, Angela, I think the reason we're speaking out today is that, you know, we have heard multiple times that at this point, if you're silent, you are complicit. And so that resonated with us, and that's why we're speaking. Everyone has to make their own judgment on this, but that's why you're hearing us weigh in on this today.
And we appreciate you sticking with us here till the end. And to wrap it up, I just want to read the Nelson Mandela quote one more time, because I think it really does speak to what we're saying here. There can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.